Welcome and thank you for tuning in as Tremendous Life Books presents Book Talk, a monthly discussion where we speak with tremendous authors as they share the stories behind their latest books.
Hello, Tremendous Life Radio listeners. This is Tracy Jones of Tremendous Life Books, and I want to thank you for listening as we talk with another one of our tremendous authors. My father, Charlie Tremendous Jones, said that you will be the same person 5 years from now that you are today, except for two things: the people you meet and the books you read. So on that note, it is my tremendous pleasure to have award-winning speaker and best-selling author Chuck Reeves with us today. And more than 3,500 audiences all over the world have heard Chuck speak, and his presentations on leadership, personal development, and motivation have touched countless lives. And today I am especially thrilled not only as his friend, as his publisher, but also because we are going to be talking about one of my top five favorite books of all time that Chuck has written, and it's called Journal of a Climber, Climbing and Conquering the Mountains of Life. And Chuck, I just want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, Tracy, so good to hear your voice. Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. So Chuck, can you tell our listeners again, and I don't want to spoil their thinking, hey, are we on a hiker or an Appalachian Trail, Journal of a Climber, what's going on? Can you tell us a little bit about the message, the metaphor in the book? It's almost like a Who Moved My Cheese kind of thing, a parable. And what in your background motivated you to write a parable life lesson such as you did in this book?
Great question. You know, your father, Charlie Tremendous Jones, impacted more people than we will ever know. And he said, of course, the people you meet and the books you read. Well, he is one of the people that I met. And what I realized, Tracy, was he was on a journey, as were my other mentors, and I wanted to learn, what are they learning? What are they striving for? What are they trying to achieve? And I realized that this new phrase was out, moving from success to significance. And most of the people I knew had already achieved that, but they weren't satisfied. So what were they striving for? And then, is there a secret to success? So people are always asking, what's your secret to success? Well, the secret is you never give up. You just keep going. But you go after a defined goal. You go after whatever your quest is, whatever you believe your mission in life is. You go after it, understanding it's not going to be a smooth, easy trip. At least it hasn't been for anybody that I've ever met. So I started putting this information down on paper, and once I started writing it, it just flowed. I wrote the entire book in a very short period of time. It actually surprised me.
Excellent. So tell me how you came up with the idea of using a climber and his particular journal to kind of outline the book.
Oh, good. Well, first of all, the book lays out what most of us go through in life, knowingly or unknowingly, and we climb a mountain. The very first mountain that the journalist goes to is Mount Majority. And unfortunately, this is where too many people stop. And they stop there because they think this is success. Why do they think it's success? Because on television, they tell us what success is. We read in books, this is what success is. You wear these clothes, you drive this car, you live in this neighborhood. And I realize that most people reach that point and then they stop. But the folks that I had met had gone beyond there to go from the first mount, which is Mount Majority, to the second mount. You have to go through a valley. If you think about mountains being sequential, between the mountains, there has to be a valley or it's all one mountain. So I started examining that, interviewing people, talking to them about how they had conquered their different fears, how they had overcome obstacles that would have stopped a lesser person. And I realized we're all on this quest. And the analogy of using a mountain climber just seemed to make the most sense. And as the climber moves from mountain to mountain, in the book you'll read in his journal how he had the same misgivings, the same doubts that, gee, I really want to go to the next level, but I'm not sure that I can. I want to go to the next level, I'm not sure I'm worthy. I want to go to the next level, but really I've paid such a price to get to this point, I don't really want to go any further. One of the best ways to understand this is to go to your high school reunion. I went to my first high school reunion. It was I think it was a 20-year, 25-year. I had the invitation. I knew exactly what hotel to go to, what room to go to. And Tracy, I went in and there was nothing there but a bunch of old people, so I just left. What I realized was we all think we are younger, we are better, we are stronger than our contemporaries. And you know what? Mm-hmm. That's true. In our area of specialty, we are stronger than others because that's our quest. That's our goal. That's what I believe our purpose in life is. That's what we were called to do.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Well, what I loved, and for the readers, when you start out, and Chuck will go through all the different mounts and the valleys, the seven different mounts and valleys, but when you start off on Mount Majority, which is where the populace is, and then you realize as you try and have to go down to experience or failure to get to the next level, everybody's like, "Why? It's lonely." And it is only because you're leaving the majority behind. And number two, I think there's a lot of negativity today about you're not unity. We all need to stick here together. And it's almost a bashing of people that leave the mount, which it's always been that way. Who are you to think that you can go further than me? Great leaders, anybody always gets that. But I love that, you know, just it's always why I read is when I sit there and I feel I'm going through this stuff and am I doing this wrong or I feel like I'm persecuted or whatever. No, this is just how it's done. This is the price you have to pay to get to the summit. And in the book for the listeners, there are various people throughout the Journal's Climber. Not everybody's there to help them. A lot of people are there to discourage them or trick them or trap them. And it's, you know, it's like, okay, so it's not just me. This happens to other people. But you talked about success to significance. Can you tell me about the difference between, I mean, it's intuitively obvious to a lot of people because once you dial into your passion, you're like, whoa, okay, now I get it. Now I'm really living. But can you, for those that are making this journey, can you talk about the difference between just existing, just kind of sitting on Mount Majority, versus living life when you know your purpose? And I think then you kind of have the impetus to go all through the ups and downs of life.
Oh, good point. You know, it's interesting that successful people do not resent successful people. Mm-hmm. Unsuccessful people resent them because it seems to be, for too many people, an indicator that they have failed. So if somebody's ahead of me, they are better than me or they think they're better than me. I got was flying the other day and a gentleman said, well, you know, those people up in first class.
Yeah.
They're the same people that were in coach yesterday. They just happened to get an upgrade or something. So we tend to have an envy of other people until we start reaching those higher mounts. You know, your dad, Charlie Tremendous Jones, had reached the highest mountain a person can reach because he did not envy anyone. He did not dislike anyone. He did not put down anyone. He had every bragging right that any professional speaker could want, and he never bragged. So when I watched his life and his contemporaries, the other people, the other mentors like him, I realized there's something there. So how does a person know when they have attained this? It's when they stop envying other people, when they stop saying negative things about other folks. I will never be a neurosurgeon. I admire neurosurgeons. I'm a pretty good guitarist, but every once in a while, I'll hear a great guitarist. And I listen to him. My first reaction is, I think I'll go home and sell my guitar. The second reaction is, wow, that's what the instrument is capable of doing. Now, you mentioned having a passion for what we do. If you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. Mm-hmm. We look at our purpose in life, and I believe we have multiple purposes in life, and each one of those is represented by one of the mounts in the book. So initially, mm-hmm. we just kind of want to get there. If you take Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of human needs, we just want to know we can make it, we can provide for ourselves. And that's not enough. So we decide we want to go to the next level, whatever that level is, and that's success, as other people deem success to be. And then that's not enough, so we want to go to significance. I had a Q&A session one time, and this lady stood up and blindsided me. She said, "What do you want on your tombstone?" Oh, my gosh, I'm not prepared for this one. So I said, I wanted to say he was real old. But I had to think about it. And as I pondered that, I realized, you know, that's what significance is really about. And then I realized, well, we have to go beyond that. What is beyond significance? We have multiple purposes, and in today's vernacular, that's called reinventing ourselves, isn't it? You know, I've watched you much longer than you know that I've watched you, and you have reinvented yourself sometimes by design and sometimes by circumstance. I believe the circumstances are divinely driven, and we have the option of whether or not we're going to capitalize on them or not, but the circumstances were laid in front of you. At any point, Tracy, you and anyone who's listening, who has achieved a level, who's gone to another mount, had the opportunity to say, yes, I'll climb it, or no, I'll stay right where I am. Yeah. And for most people, that staying where we are leaves an emptiness. It leaves a hollowness. And so they know they're questing for more. And first, it's more for me. But as you get up on the higher mountains, it's more for everybody else.
Right. I love it, Chuck. That's fantastic. And do you think... So people like us and like our listeners, we are getting to the point where we're getting more seasoned, we're wiser, we see people, and like you said, we don't become critical of them. It inspires us. It doesn't make us envy and want to tear them down. Other people's success is like, oh, that's inspiring to me. But do you think that everybody has a desire to live a life of purpose? I mean, we work with a lot of people that, I've known have seemed content to completely grouse for 30 years or longer. I mean, and again, that's their life. We're not judging them, but do you think everybody, and I guess it's more or less for my own knowing as I'm on the path of life, do you think everybody has a desire to live a life of purpose?
Oh, I think we're born with it. I think everybody was created for a purpose. And every person is different. Everyone has a different DNA. Is that correct? I mean, I've been told all my life that every snowflake is different. Well, how do you know? I mean, who's been out there checking those things? But we know that every person is different. Our DNA strands are different, which means we were created for a different purpose. Now, what happens? What happens sometimes is environmental. So we're raised in a dysfunctional family. I have concluded that dysfunctional family is a redundant term. All families are dysfunctional. We're all human.
Agreed.
But circumstances can do that. I'm a decorated Vietnam veteran, and I watched some of the people that I fought with and some of the people that were over there when I was there, and the situation ruined some, and it made some stronger. So how do we find the difference? And what I believe wholeheartedly is resources like yours, like Tremendous Life Books, provide that elixir. If you've been beaten down, if you've been discouraged, if you think you don't really count, if you don't know what your purpose is, there are writings out there, there are recordings out there, there are messages out there that you can tap into, and it will change the way that you think. At my high school reunion, this gentleman came up. I actually recognized him. He didn't think I would, but I knew who he was. He came up and he said, and he gave me his name. He said, "You'll remember that I scored the winning touchdown against Valdosta when we won state." I didn't remember that. That was a high school football game. But guess what? It was the apex of his life. Right. Why has he chosen to stop there? And I didn't have an opportunity to engage him in enough conversation, but it has troubled me ever since.
Yes. Well, it kind of reminds me of that Muhammad Ali quote, the man who views his life the same at 50 as he did at 20 has just wasted the last 30 years of his life. And
wow.
It's kind of that
great
thing, you know, you come out of high school, like I moved away after high school, came back 30 years later. And it's like a whole different world. But yet there's people, like you said, that's it. Well, you peak out. But that's your choice to peak out. Because there's always further
everyone
future
has the choice.
Opportunities.
Not everyone knows they have the choice.
Exactly. Well, now let me for the listeners, because as you, I know you can't even imagine this, but when you get this book, Chuck has, and we'll talk a little bit about that at the end. Chuck has this visual. He has drawings throughout of it, and it is like written like a journal from a climber about the different things and what he's thinking and what he plans on doing. But he has this little graphic. And Chuck, can you walk the people through the different mounts and valleys, and as they progress up your life? And what I loved about it is I can now look back, now that I've got some seasoning and i.e. perspective behind me, and I can say, oh, this time in my life, this was a terrible 3 year, like I was out in the wilderness for 3 years, the metaphorical wilderness, but like a professional and a personal wilderness. And here I can kind of see where I was at the valley of risk, and because that's why I was climbing to this. So can you just tell the listeners what the different mounts are, and then what the different valleys are that they have to hit before they can start climbing to the next mount?
Absolutely, I would love to. First of all, we begin our climb up Mount Majority, and it's fairly crowded because most everyone seeks to be accepted. So we want to fit in. We want to have the same things everybody else does. And the climber realizes he's on the top of Mount Majority before he even knew it, because it's such a common place. He decides he'll move out to the next mount, and the next mount is the Mount of Achievement. So we go from majority, doing the same thing everybody else does, to achieving something that other people perceive to be extraordinary. There are no extraordinary people. There are only ordinary people doing things that other people perceive to be extraordinary. To move from Mount Majority to Mount Achievement, we have to go through the Valley of Learning. And learning is very important. What have I learned today? What have I done today to improve my mind? In every valley, there is a passive and an aggressive hindrance. There's a hindrance that's going to attack us, and there's a passive hindrance that'll trip us up if we're not careful. After the Mount of Achievement, we go into the Valley of Experience. I believe that everyone sees the world through two lens. One lens is education, the other is experience. Education is everything that we've learned that impacts the way that we think. It's formal education, it's the article that you read this morning. And experience is any event in our life that shapes the way that we think. Once we've gone through experience, then we reach Mount Success. Now we realize what success is for us. Not what success is for everybody. That's Mount Majority. What is success for us? And then we move from success to significance by going through the Valley of Risk. And I'm so happy to hear you think you're in the Valley of Risk. I have a different opinion. I think you're further along. But in the Valley of Risk, we start confronting some of our deepest fears, some of our darkest fears. And once we confront those, we realize we have reached significance. Then we want to go from Mount Significance to Mount Wisdom. We want to be known more for what we know and can teach other people, what we know and can share with other people. That's actually more important for us now than just achieving. And we see this happening with our generations. They say that grandparents and grandchildren get along so well because they share a common enemy. Well, I'm trying to pass my wisdom down to my grandchildren. To get there, we have to go through the Valley of Failure. When someone wants to tell me how good they are, I want to hear about their failures. Tell me about when you fell down flat on your face, got up, dusted yourself off, and tried again. The road to the top is not a smooth, easy trip. From wisdom, we go to Mount Servanthood. This is where we start serving other people. And the way we get there is going through the Valley of Humility. We need to go through a humiliating time in our life. We need to have things taken away from us. We need to realize what really is important and what isn't. So after the valley of humility, we reach Mount Servanthood, and it's all about serving other people. Then there is the seventh mount, which has no name in the book, because no one has ever returned from the seventh mount. And to get there, we have to go through the valley of surrender. Are we really willing to lay everything down to achieve our ultimate purpose? And, you know, when the rubber meets the road, I don't think so. I like to think that I'm that noble. Probably I'm not.
Yes. Well, I mean, that just, it's just a fantastic path that just shows you, you know, as long as we're breathing, we've got progress we still need to make. And I love that you had that seventh mouth out there, that is the ultimate goal. And is it achievable in this mortal coil, in our, you know, wicked flesh, kind of thing, you know, but we sure strive for it, and we constantly, you know, seek to be obedient and give more gifts back. So, I mean, I absolutely adore the metaphor, Chuck. Thank you so much. I go back to this constantly throughout my life and map. It's like a map, like Indiana Jones. And okay, these are the years I was here, and then this is this, and now I see why I had to go down into that, because that catapulted me into this kind of thing. And like you said, speakers and writers, people don't want to hear about how everything went right for you. I don't want to. Yeah. I want to hear about how what bad happened, and how did you overcome it, and what did you screw up? I mean, that you realized, hey, I made a bad decision, but I'm going to press on forward. I mean, that's what really helps people, because they say that out of people that buy books, 19-1, people will buy a book because they have a pain point in their life, and they need a solution. So that's what this is about. This is about, gosh, I'm going through all this turmoil and this journey, and life is hard. What do I do? So, I mean, that's why this is the kind of stuff that I really eat up. But let me ask you this. Okay, so we're on our journey, and you talk about, you have your Sherpas on there, but it basically is kind of a solitary thing, as our own destiny in life, although we like to sometimes blame a lot of people for why we are advancing or not advancing. You know, it is pretty much a lonely individual thing. We're responsible for our own journey. But what should we do if we don't find others who are encouraging us on our journey? Because I think a lot of times we just kind of think everybody's going to be happy. But those of us that have done any kind of climbing know that's not exactly the case.
Oh, yes. We have to be so careful about the people that we choose to bring into our intimate circle. We can have a lot of friends, and we can have a lot of teachers. We can have people that are instructing us in various areas of life, and that's important. But when you look at your intimate camaraderie, who are those people that you allow to speak deeply into your life? And we change those over time, although we do have some lifetime friends. Most people are in our lives for a season or a reason. We have very few that are in it for the long term. When we look at those individuals, are they examples of who or what we want to be? And then the big question shows up, why? Are they an example for me? Are they a role model for me? And then the question becomes, why? My first role models drove fancy cars. Why were they my role models? I wanted to drive a fancy car. Well, okay. That's Mount Majority for you. And then Some people said, if you're going to be successful, you have to drive a Jaguar, you have to drive a Rolls Royce or a Bentley. So that became the quest. And now I realize I need to be very careful of my why. Why have I elected to have these people in my life? I would call Tremendous on his birthday every year. And he would laugh and say, this is not my birthday. My birthday was April the 7th or whatever it was. And then we would get into some dialogue, and his dialogue every single time was, let me read something to you that I read this morning. There are people who have 30 years of experience, and there are people who have 1 year of experience 30 times over. For people like Tremendous, every day was a new day. Every day was another opportunity. And when he found someone that could speak into his life, even for a minute or for a year or maybe for a decade, he brought that person under his wing or he went under their wing. And that's, I believe, how successful people grow. You know, Nito Cobain is famous for quoting, I think it was Solomon who said, if you would be a great man, you must walk with great men. Mm-hmm. He didn't say watch great men. He didn't say think about great men. He didn't say emulate or ape great men. What he said was you walk with them. And part of that mm-hmm. walking is going down in the valley. And part of that walking mm-hmm. is, as you said, you trip up, you make a mistake, and you try again.
Okay, absolutely. And what would you say, and I know you've kind of alluded to it with a lot of the who you're associating with in the books, is there any other thing that you would recommend about to motivate ourselves to go down into the valley and strive to reach the next level? Because remember, looking out the valley, we're at a peak. So it's nice. We finally made it there. And I know there is no such thing as status quo, but for a brief moment, we feel like, okay, I got this under control. How do you motivate yourself every year? And I know my dad up until his last breath was still calling people and sharing, literally on his last breath, sharing with others and encouraging others. How do you finish the race strong? And how do you motivate yourself to keep going down in the valley? Because every time we go up, we have to go down first.
Yep. Well, you hit the big E word when you talked about your dad, and that's encouragement. Mm-hmm. My mission statement is one word, encouragement. When I lay down at night, I think back over my day, who did I go out of my way to encourage today? And if I can't recall it, I get out of bed and go send an email. It's all about them. It's not about us. So when you ask the question, well, how do you keep going? If you're trying to go for yourself, you'll quit. We all have self-esteem issues. And why should I go through all this aggravation and stuff if it's just for me? You start doing it for other people. You reach that point, I believe, at Mount Wisdom, which is after significance, and then certainly at Mount Servanthood, you're living that as a way of life. Are you living for yourself? Or are you living to help the world be a better place? And that's not a platitude. Your world might be three people. Your world might be one other person. But are you living for yourself or for other people?
Well,
by the way,
you hit. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yes, Chuck. No, I was going to say.
I have a fly wall right here in my office. And whenever I'm discouraged, because it happens to all of us, whenever I'm ready to throw in the towel and say, I'm not going to, I just go to my why wall. And on my why wall, there's a gentleman kneeling down by a water pump. It's a water pump in Zambia. I don't have any intention of ever going to Zambia, but because that water pump is there, 250 people have clean water. And when those people have clean water, the children spend their days in school not hauling water. And when they haul water, it's so dirty it gives them diarrhea. And in that part of the world, diarrhea can be terminal. So when I start feeling bad about myself, I look at that. I look at the woman in Cambodia who's wearing a pair of reading glasses, and the tag is still on the glasses. She's had them for days, but she don't want to take the tag off. She wants people to know she has new glasses. And she told an interpreter she saw her hands for the first time in years. So when we look at how do we move up the ladder, how do we keep ourselves going, get yourself out of the way. Get rid of the mirror, open a window.
Absolutely. Well, you hit the nail on the head. Everybody wants to say, why? Why is there war? Why is there hunger? Why? Stop asking why. How? How are you going to make a difference? Why is a ridiculous, like you said, the why? There's so much else going on. You're on this planet, and we need to tip the balance back to giving back more versus just taking and sobbing and lamenting, and it's all about me. We've got to reverse this kind of, I know, especially in America, this kind of weird trend we're on where everybody's, it's all about them and what they're going to get out of the system. The world can't exist like that. We have to continue. Everybody has to give. I don't care what job, what career, what financial, everybody has the ability to give back. Like you said, even if it's done as an encourager. I mean, the email you sent to me 2 days ago, I can't tell you how that touched me. And I can't go out and encourage other people unless I've got people like you feeding into me. So, it's just, I love it. Chuck, so how do you envision, just for everybody out there, how can people from all different ages and walks of life, again, where somebody maybe just starting out, a student, or somebody that's like, oh, I've done enough, or I've, you know, share how everybody at any stage of their life, at any experience level, at any career background, belief system, can look at this and use your book?
Oh, Tracy, that's a very important question, and it's also difficult to answer. What's been interesting to me is I've given the book to people who, frankly, haven't quite made it up to Mount Majority, and they told me they were all the way through. They were on the sixth mount. Then I've given it to other people that I thought had achieved some really significant results, and they had themselves pegged back somewhere in a valley. It really doesn't matter how old you are. It has nothing to do with chronology. It has everything to do with your willingness to live a life of purpose. Rick Warren wrote Purpose-Driven Life. Look how popular that book was. Why was that book popular? Because people have an innate sense, I want to live a purposeful life. I want life to mean something. I look at young people, old people, chronology really doesn't have anything to do with it. What you do want to look at, however, is what is, according to what you've experienced so far, what is your purpose in life? And the way you figure that out is, what gives you joy? What gives you peace? What gives you energy? When everything's going wrong, what gets you out of bed in the morning? When everything is going right, what keeps you grounded so that you don't lord it over other people? And obviously it takes education and experience, our two limbs, to really come to a real understanding of that. It's easy to quit. It's easy to come up with excuses. I started to write a book of excuses, and I realized it'd be the biggest book in the history of the world. A buddy of mine said his neighbor came over and wanted to borrow his chainsaw. And my buddy said, borrow my chainsaw? With all that's going on in the Middle East, how can you ask to borrow my chainsaw? And his neighbor looked kind of puzzled, and he said, what's going on in the Middle East have to do with me borrowing your chainsaw? And my buddy said, I'm not going to loan you my chainsaw. Any excuse will do. I'm not going to succeed. Any excuse will do.
Yes.
So how do you find the quest? What gives you joy? What gives you impetus? Now, there's a red flag here. Prosperity heightens pathology. Prosperity heightens pathology. So whatever our weakness is, when that first wave of prosperity comes through, it'll wipe you out. The first person to win a $1 million lottery went to jail for writing bad checks. Mm-hmm. People who have a tendency to want to play the slot machines, when they come into a lot of money, they lose it to the casino. So prosperity heightens pathology. That's not what I'm talking about when I talk about purpose. Purpose means this is why I'm here. This is what brings me deep, unfathomable joy. I really feel good at the end of the day.
I was at a book writing conference. This was several years back, just that your prosperity heightens pathology. And that was her comment. She's like, when success hits, and it'll happen quick. I mean, not an overnight success, but all of a sudden something will have taken hold and you'll be catapulted. That is the hardest thing for you to handle, not the rejection, all the stuff, that notoriety, because different sides of you come out then. And that is the hardest thing for a successful. And I'm like, what? The thing that we all want is going to be the hardest thing that we're going to have to do. And so that's exactly kind of what you just said. I never heard it that way. Thank you so much. I just constantly learn from you, Chuck. I love it.
Back to you. We're here to teach each other, aren't we?
Absolutely. And can you tell our listeners how they can follow you or contact you and hear some more of just your wonderful, tremendous input and insights?
Oh, wonderful. Thank you for the opportunity. I actually had someone today in my office, and I'm going to start using Twitter. Can you believe that? I'm going to go right on into the
century.
I know, here we go. So I'm on LinkedIn, Chuck Reeves. Twitter, I think, is going to be Chuck Reeves CSO, which is Chief Sales Officer. It's one of my ongoing things. But chuck@chuckreeves.com is my email, and chuckreeves.com is my primary website. And I do put out a newsletter. Most of them are on leadership or sales or something like that. But I also have a newsletter called The Motivational Minute. And it's just a quick shot of motivation based on something that I've learned or seen or experienced somewhere. So anybody who wants to follow, go to chuckreeves.com. Just remember, we spell Reeves, R-E-A-V-E-S. The R-double-E's are Baptist and Moonshiner, so we change the spelling of our name, chuckreeves.com. And I'll be happy to hear from anybody, and mostly I want to hear from people how the book has impacted them, what the book has meant to them, and how we can improve it. We may do a 2.0 at some point. We may want to go further because, you know, I haven't reached the seventh mount yet, have I?
Right, right. You and me both, brother. Amen.
There we go. Brother is the wrong one. You and I are brother and sister, have been from day one, a long time.
Yes, sir. Well, Chuck, I just want to thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us today. And for our listeners, this has been a discussion with the tremendous author, Chuck Reeves. The book is Journal of a Climber, Climbing and Conquering the Mountains of Life. And always remember, you can get Chuck's books and hundreds of other motivational masterpieces at www.tremendouslifebooks.com, where we work to change the world one book at a time. Thank you so much for listening, and have a tremendous rest of the day.
Thank you for helping us change the world one book at a time. Join us again next month, where we'll discuss another life-changing classic. And remember, as Charlie Tremendous Jones said, you'll be the same person in 5 years as you are today, except for two things: the people you meet and the books you read.